a Canadian TELUS Mobility customer lost his cell phone.
Mm-hmm. So it can happen to anyone, right?
It can happen. You might want to cancel your service at that point, but maybe you think, oh, well, maybe it's, you know, tucked in a cushion somewhere, or maybe I left it at a friend's place.
Or in the car, somewhere like that.
Somebody's running around the world with my smartphone. Well, that's kind of what it seems happened, because they got a bill that was well over their regular $64 per month, in the range of $24,000.
It seems laughably high. Like, that's ridiculously high.
Think they would eventually catch on and just say,
something's wrong here. But they do catch on, and they say, okay, well, we need to verify this. We got to figure out what's going on here. So what do? They send a text message to the person using the phone and say, you know, is this really you? And, you know, are you sure you want to run up this bill? And
reply.
Totally. Whoever it is is going to reply. Yes. Nice. Yes, please.
Cash advance?
And let's just transfer some money while we're at it. Well, tonight we're going to be speaking with a gentleman who's been on the show before. You remember him from episode number 479 of Category 5 Technology TV just back in November, when we spoke about a compromising attack on a local casino Rama, here in Ontario, Canada. Robert Capps is the VP of Business Development for Vancouver-based New Data Security, and basically what they do is they predict and prevent online fraud for companies. And I'm going to let him share a little bit more about New Data and what they do. Robert, it is so great to see you. Thanks for joining us once again tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Now, could you just, for the viewers who maybe didn't catch episode number 479, I'd like to give you a chance right off the bat just to introduce your company. This is New Data Security. You can find out more about them. And now it's NU, not NEW, so newdatasecurity.com. I'll give you a chance just to introduce yourself, Robert.
Sure, yeah. Robert Capps from New Data Security. We do positive consumer identification online. So you've seen multi-factor authentication. You've seen those challenges, text messages, PIN codes, whatever they happen to be. We do all of that stuff behind the scenes without friction and allowing our customers to understand who their real customers are when they're interacting.
And this, you know, this is a case we're talking off the top of the show. I'm sure you heard where this particular gentleman in Canada here had this TELUS bill that went through the roof. And TELUS is a mobile provider, just so you know. And so, you know, what does TELUS really do in order to protect their users and make sure that the user who is operating the cell phone is, in fact, the end user that's paying the bill?
It's a really hard problem, because a lot of the technology that folks use to do identification of the legitimate user have to do with one of the three main factors that we look at. It's either something you know, like a password or a passcode, something you are, so a physical biometric like a fingerprint or an iris scan traditionally, or something you have. Like a cell phone, right? A lot of people, they carry their phone around with them. It's always in their pocket, unless, of course, they've lost it. In this case, it looks like the carrier was relying on the presence of that physical phone being in the possession of a legitimate account holder.
That sounds good. It sounds like two-factor authentication, but when you are the mobile provider and you're using the mobile phone as the authentication mechanism, it seems like there's a little bit of a disconnect there from security standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the concept that if the phone's gone for a significant period of time, you might want to report it to your carrier, right? It's a lot like a credit card or even a debit card or even a checkbook, right?
That's what we're thinking, but how quickly do you, you know, just in this particular instance, how quickly do you jump on, oh, well, maybe my phone has been stolen? Because you may think that you just lost it between the couch cushions or the kids hid it somewhere.
If you went somewhere
like
for the weekend and then you think, okay, well, I'll just be back there in a couple of weeks. I'll just tell them, you know.
Right, yeah. Who knows,
Hold my phone.
Well, hold the phone, but they may also want to hold the service.
At least put it on hold.
Yeah, the best thing for a consumer to do is to call the carrier immediately and say, hey, I can't find my phone. Can you help me with it, right? They might be able to locate where it is and be able to ping it and identify a general region where you might have left it. But in the case where it's stolen or missing, you know, get that reported to the carrier as quickly as possible to minimize any possibilities. Now, isn't just the physical phone loss that causes these sort of scenarios to happen. We've seen situations where someone impersonates the legitimate user and has a brand new phone added to the account, taking over the old person's phone number and such, and basically just tricking the call centers into enrolling a new phone on the customer's account, not just to charge up the bills, but also to take possession of their cell phone number so they can get SMS messages and things from the bank in order to commit fraud. So, the cell phone really has become the gateway to consumers' identity, not just, for the purposes of billing, huge sums of money as people travel, but also as that second factor for authentication for high-value transactions.
Sure. Now, how big of an issue is this? Is this something that we, carrying a smartphone in our pockets that we really need to be concerned with at this point?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I was
Zach
definitely.
Just got it.
Yeah, there you are.
Any technology in your pocket, I would be wary of, especially in this day and age with malware and other sorts of attacks being present. When we talk about things like cell phones being second authenticators, we're so attached to them. As soon as they go missing in our pockets, we tend to notice faster than we notice that a credit card is missing or a checkbook or even cash. So, from that perspective, at least we're in a good position to know when these things go missing pretty quickly. You can then take the right steps to get the device deactivated or in some way, shape, or form secure that access. But at the end of the day, right, it is yet another form factor of authentication that we have. It's yet another device we have to keep track of. And the consumer really needs to be aware that there are so many things tied to this technology that they may not think about on a day-to-day basis.
Right. We're speaking with Robert Capps from New Data Security. He says data. I say data. That's just the way it is. When I think about, I see so many customers and people who, and we have viewers on the show who have had accounts compromised. We had one this week who had a Gmail account compromised, and not at all related to their phone, but if I lost my phone and if we found out, if we were that person who, oh my goodness, somebody is using my phone, what kind of things can those compromising users do with my phone? What can they do that I need to be concerned about? Because sometimes we think, well, it doesn't really matter. I'll just cancel my phone service. But what are the threats?
Any data on there can be used against you. So if you think about what data might be stored on the device, think about your address book and a smartphone.
Right, yes.
It has fields for date of birth. It has fields for family members, the assistant's name for a business contact, anniversaries, all of these data points that are useful potentially to a fraudster or a hacker to assume someone's identity, maybe not even your own. So it isn't just your own information you're losing on a device. It could be that of your friends and family or business associates. And so, it really is incumbent on the owner of that device, the person retaining that data on that mobile phone, to take every step possible to secure it, inclusive of things like passcodes on the device. Every major smartphone today has the ability for you to enable a passcode so that theoretically only you can access it. Mm-hmm. You've got more advanced phones that now have biometric locks, like the Apple Touch ID, and there's similar things coming in from Samsung and Kyocera and other manufacturers of devices are producing these physical biometric unlock capabilities. Using those technologies, using the ability to do remote wiping of the device through your service provider or through the phone manufacturer, all very important things to protect the data on them.
They sound really important, Robert, but they also sound very complex. And as a parent, we talk about, add some protection, add some two-factor authentication to unlock your phone and these kinds of things. So, but if my kids are playing a game on my phone and all of a sudden it goes to sleep, they need to come to me to get me to unlock it. And as a parent, we know, and I'm sure there are viewers who are nodding their heads and going, yeah, you know what? I have that disabled specifically because my kids are using my device, and that can lead to problems.
It can.
Even just as recently, a couple of days ago, I reached my data cap on my phone, which was weird.
Data caps. Now, that's a novel idea.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know that I had my Wi-Fi turned off. I have Wi-Fi at home, so I have a low data service thing, and I had forgotten that I turned my Wi-Fi off. So I had reached my cap.
Okay.
So my provider, who isn't TELUS, but still, texted me, "You're at 90% right now.
Right.
respond with one to increase by a certain number of megabytes, two to for one. I don't. I'm so bad at this.
I can see right through this. This is
right.
This has, this has CRTC written all over it. Yeah. These are regulations that have been put in place by the Canadian government so that when we're on our mobile devices, those kinds of things happen.
So I press two. Mm-hmm. And so I added like an extra $20 to my bill just to save myself the $35,
Yeah, for the month even. Yeah.
But at the same time, if it wasn't me, how did they know that it was
me? They couldn't. And we're gonna talk about that in just a moment, Robert, because I know there are some solutions out there. But just backing up for just a moment, because I think it's important to note, we're talking about and you brought to mind the thought of identity theft. And it sounds so serious, and it sounds like one of those things that could never happen to me. But we're starting to see more and more, for example, CEO identity theft. Mm-hmm. And it's not even somebody compromising my accounts and locking me out of my bank accounts and out of my personal data or traveling the world on my passport. It's not, we can't think of identity theft as that big, because what can happen, as you know, Robert, somebody could find a CEO's phone or somebody who's at a certain level that is a buyer for a company and is able to then message somebody within the company and say, okay, I'm in the Caymans. I need you to transfer $10,000 to my account right away
now,
because my visa has been locked out. Yeah, and because they now appear to be that person. So the identity theft is not even a grand scheme. It's just simply, I've got the contacts, I know the names of the people to reach out to, and I can trick them into thinking, you know, using tactics that we see in phishing scams and things like that, social engineering, to trick people into transferring funds. And so this is a really, really big issue. But what, as Sasha was alluding to, what can people do that are just average users? Mm-hmm. I bring up C128D commented on our YouTube channel and said, here's the problem. Even if we are capable technologically of creating a dummy-proof technological infrastructure, the problem is that it would be so unwieldy and so complicated that the average computer user, who is probably not even qualified to use a computer, would not be able to operate it. So there has to be a fine line. So what can we do? Because it is just average users who are in companies. So how can companies truly protect themselves?
Oh man, there's a lot of questions in there. We were talking about identity theft, and one of the things that I think gets mixed up a little bit in the media specifically is that identity theft has a very specific definition, and that is where someone uses your information, your identity information, your name, your address, date of birth, maybe your family information, to open new credit in your name or to access an account that has value that you already have by using those data points. What we're talking about here specifically is impersonation of a legitimate user. And this has been a scheme we've been seeing for a long time with broad-reaching effect, especially at the treasury management, the CEO level of an organization. These schemes tend to happen after the credentials for an email account have been taken, specifically the CEO's credentials for their email account. Now, if you get a hold of their physical phone with the credentials already embedded, it makes it that much easier, but it's a little harder to get a hold of those phones to enact those sorts of attacks in mass. Traditionally, we'll see these things happen just through keylogging or malware or some other technological scheme to get that CEO's username and password, and they'll just log into webmail. And they'll send the message without ever having to have physical access to the individual or their devices at all. And you know, what do you do in those cases? If you're an employee in a treasury management department or accounting department or whoever it happens to be, and you get a weird request, don't action on it. Pick up the phone and call them. And if you can't get a hold of that person, call their assistant, call someone else who knows their travel plans. There are places you can go to verify those interactions. These sort of schemes happen because people inherently want to please their employers. They want to do whatever they can to do a good job for them and to be responsive to their needs. And so people that are using these sort of attacks are preying on the human behavior, basically that people want to be helpful. And they expect that the more dramatic and the more demanding the request, the faster somebody's going to react to it trying to be helpful. And, you know, if anyone gets one of these, like I said, pick up the phone, make a phone call to someone of authority in the organization. Just verify this person really is in the Cayman Islands and needs $1 million wired right now.
Right. Yeah.
It sounds like simple, but that's the best way to sort these sort of issues. It's out of the ordinary. Pick up the phone and ask.
Very good. Okay, we're speaking with Robert Capps from New Data Security. We've got to take a really quick break, and when we come back, we're going to flip the coin, take the different approach, the opposite approach, and say, you know, hey, what can companies do to recognize whether the person they are talking to is, in fact, the consumer, their customer? So stick around. We're going to be right back after this. Jeff Weston.
Yeah, man.
You're building a brand new, beautiful website.
What?
Aren't you?
No. Am I?
Oh, you're a terrible actor.
What?
This is where acting comes into play.
Oh, I didn't know we were acting.
You're supposed to act.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
Yeah, I'm building a really cool website. Are you building a really cool website? You need hosting. One of the things about a hosting account is you don't want to have limitations put on your website.
It's true.
How much hard drive space do you have? How many email accounts? How many domains can point to it? Well, we've got an amazing deal for you. For a very limited time, cat5.tv/dreamhost. For just $5 and a bit of change per month, you are going to get unlimited website hosting, unlimited email accounts on that hosting service. You are also going to receive a free domain name.
Ooh.
So your own .com.
Nice.
To put that amazing website that you've been working on
it's
on
true.
There. If you want to build a WordPress site, fine. Sign up. cat5.tv/dreamhost.
Just don't put Panama Papers on it.
Just don't do it. But hey, it's a great deal, folks. Best deal you're going to find. $5 and change per month. Go to cat5.tv/dreamhost. Welcome back. This is Category 5 Technology TV, and this evening we are speaking with Robert Capps from New Data Security, and we're talking about, we're using the example of a recent attack that happened by simply, well, not even an attack, but somebody lost their phone, and the person who found it ran up a $24,000 bill. Robert, great to have you here.
Great to be here.
Robert, when we think about this, okay, so we're looking at, let's say, the mobility provider. They sent a text message to the end user, or so they thought, that said, hey, we're about to hit that cap, just like Sasha had. Do you want to authorize this? And, of course, the end user, who was not the actual person paying the bill, said yes. What can companies like that? Yeah. What can companies like that mobility provider do in order to do a better job of protecting their end users?
So first and foremost, using the device they've issued to the consumer and verifying that's the legitimate device using the techniques that they have. They can verify that the device's serial number, EIN, can be, is the same device that's on the network that they issued to the customer. They can verify that that device hasn't been tampered with and that it's still geographically in a specific area. They can do these sort of things behind the scenes to do some verification of whether or not the device is where it should be. When a device is lost, when a physical device is lost, that's very difficult for an organization to be able to detect, especially if it stays within the same geographic region that normally does. Mm-hmm. In the case where the bill gets that high, going over by $20 or $30, it's pretty easy to send them a text message and verify. When you get over $1,000, you might need to make a phone call to the customer and just verify some additional information. The other thing that can be done is to push those customers back to the web portal to log in and verify their credentials and maybe do some additional verifications that they still possess the device.
Yeah, okay. That makes a lot of sense. So I could see them picking up the phone and calling the customer's cell phone and actually saying, what is your date of birth?
Or their home phone. Because that big of a bill, you may want to check.
Yeah. Because they
something
might have
outside
that information.
Of the device that could be locked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Do we have any questions coming in the chat room? Join us on it's Category 5 on Freenode if you have any questions. We're speaking with Robert Capps from New Data Security. It's always a pleasure having you here. Robert, we hear about two-factor authentication, and I think about this in terms of our login credentials for websites and things like that. Obviously, it doesn't help us if we lose something like a passport or some other personally identifying information, our wallet and things like that. But we're in a progressively more and more digital world where our cell phone becomes our wallet, our cell phone becomes our personal identification and our communications device. So right. Is there is two-factor authentication something that is going to fix this?
I mean,
no. Put it simply.
A little bit of a leading question. But
so I want you to think about this, viewers. Multi-factor is really what we talk about. It isn't just looking at two factors. It's looking at as many factors as we can about the consumer's interaction and their behavior in real time to make an assessment of whether or not they are physically present in that interaction. And, you know, and if they are, just verifying that it is the right person. So when we talk about multi-factor authentication, again, it's something you have, like a cell phone or one of those little two-factor tokens that if you've ever seen a bank employee or a corporate employee have these little things, sure, in the keychain with a number that rotates all the time. This is something you physically have that's provable that you're there. A good example of something you have that everybody has in their wallet, a chip and PIN card. The chip card itself is a factor of authentication that is something you physically have issued to you by the bank that can be verified by the bank when it's placed into the slot reader. Something you are, again, we talked about physical biometrics, but also it's behavior. When we go online using a fingerprint or iris scan, it's not real easy to use in most online interactions, but how you use your device, how you type your username and password, how you go through the motions of interacting with a form, a login form, mm-hmm, you know, even down to your behaviors of whether or not you use the tab key to move between form fields or you use the mouse. All these things are very unique to an individual human. So when you take the things they have, like a device or a card or a passcode generator, you take things that they are, like their behavior and some of the physical interactions they make with their technology, and you couple that with things they know, like a username or password or secret questions or even, you know, knowledge of their credit history or where they've lived in the past or what color cars they've owned. When you take all those things together, along with the context of where they're interacting from and the other signals that are available in an online transaction, you get a very clear picture of whether or not this consumer is who they say they are. And so, you know, in a lot of cases, the reason why we can't tell who someone is at the other end of the wire is because we haven't looked at enough of the data points that are available to us to evaluate.
So is this an issue of needing a technological solution that just doesn't exist yet to really get there? Or is this all about educating not just the end users to protect themselves, but also the people who work for these companies to know that, okay, I need to pick up the phone and call this customer? Like, is that just, yeah, it's just an educational thing?
There's no silver bullet. I mean, there's no one solution. Security is a series of layers, if you think of it that way. You know, some people will say the layers of an onion or even the layers of a gumball, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you need a healthy dose of education for those users to know that there are threats, mm-hmm, and to, you know, to understand that, you know, they need to ask questions if something doesn't smell quite right. Human intuition is a really good arbitrator of risk.
Sure.
And then, you know, on top of that, we need technology. You know, everything I've talked about today so far are real world technologies that exist today and can be adopted by organizations. They just either choose not to because, you know, they don't believe that the risks are there for them, or it's too small of, yeah, a problem to deploy that, you know, technology that might be expensive or difficult.
And I think a lot of times we think that these attacks are targeted, and quite often they're not. They're very blanketed, you know, attacking vulnerable systems, and that's as simple as it is.
Yeah, I mean, it can go either way. It really depends on what they're after. When we see, sure, CEO attacks, when we see issues where they're trying to get to the CFO right, account so that they can issue orders to transact, those are very targeted attacks. Mm-hmm. They're not generally, you know, crimes of opportunity. They've done their homework. They have the org charts for who in the organization they need to contact and whose accounts they need to take over. And they're very deliberate about going after those people. When we talk about general consumers, not so much on the targeted side. It's very opportunistic. You know, their data was released in a data breach. There might be a phishing attack that's against that consumer based on the email address that was stolen, maybe their name and some other information to make that attack look legitimate. Mm-hmm. Where we see usernames and passwords stolen, we see those run across the login pages of the top 500 websites, e-commerce, banking, whatever they happen to be, and they'll run those databases through looking for overlap and valid accounts. And they know that consumers, they tend to reuse the same usernames and passwords over and over again. And so there's going to be a hit rate for them, and they'll go after those accounts.
I think here in Canada, more so than in, maybe in the States, the consumer is also the, like, there's so many mom and pop shops up here north of the border. There's so many small businesses that are just, you know, 6 or 10 people that really each individual is just a consumer. They're not educated in cybersecurity.
Right. They're not savvy in any way, which leads me to Dooley's question. Dooley DeVulcan said, are there tools for dummies to put into use for protection? So people that aren't really...
So we're talking technological tools?
Yeah. So like for people who need like relatives that need protected or like if you work in a small office and maybe some of you are more savvy than others, you know, is there something that we can use?
I would think about, you know, 6 to 10, you know, SMBs or even VSBs. You're not going to invest $100,000 in endpoint protection, right? So what can we do?
Well, I mean, when you talk about endpoint protection and you're talking about that few of the number of employees, you're talking about commercial products, to be honest. You're looking for the same products that a consumer would possibly deploy on their own, you know, laptop or PC. In those cases, you know, any of the off-the-shelf malware solutions that have you know, antivirus malware and potentially even web content filtering.
Right.
Those products are going to have some capabilities to help against some of these attacks. But keep in mind, the attacks that are most powerful are the ones that are not against the technology, but against the human psyche. They're really confidence attacks. They're cons that have just moved online. They're confidence scams. They're trying to prey on people's desire to respond quickly and be helpful to other humans. And you know, they're looking for you to, you know, or they're trying to prey on your fear of online transactions. You know, you see a lot of phishing attacks disguised as account warnings that someone's tried to access your account. Please log in right now so we can protect you. No better way to get someone to jump on that right now is to think they're about to be scammed, only to be scammed. So, I mean, it's just that's the kind of thing that it's really hard to protect against those schemes in those scenarios. And so it comes down to the not necessarily the consumers to protect themselves. I mean, they need to educate themselves, whether they're a small business or an actual at-home consumer. Education's first. Like, let's figure out a way to get people aware there are problems and questioning things.
Yeah, I think
but
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but beyond that, it's up to their institutions that they do business with for banking. It's up to their e-commerce providers that they do business with, their suppliers' websites, that they are taking the steps to make sure that when someone comes in logging in as them, that their accounts are protected in, through multi-factor authentication or keystroke and gesture verification or behavior, just, whatever it happens to be. Something
I'm thinking about protect. You know, how these things fall so flat in like online banking that... Ask the name of your dog
as a
second
topping.
Factor. Yeah. What, and okay, well, what's your favorite food? Most people are probably going to say pasta, maybe pizza.
It's carbs,
pretty generic. Yeah. So, you know, it kind of falls flat. So if there's not a technological solution and it's largely about education, and that's what we're hearing here tonight from our guest, Robert Capps, who joins us from newdatasecurity.com, and that's NU. So I get the impression that we really need to educate ourselves. That's really what it boils down to, because if these tactics, they're tactics is what they are, right? They're tapping into our fears and tricking us into doing things that we shouldn't do, and we probably know we shouldn't do. But by the time you get there and you realize, oh, I'm being scammed, it might be too late. And that's, you know, not always the case. Maybe you've lost your phone and someone's walked away with it. It's all about education and knowing that we need to now follow up with our provider and cancel service or get them to track down the phone through geolocation technology.
Right. So now, it's key to understand, though, for those consumers who are getting these demands over text message or email or anything else, most legitimate corporations and institutions are not going to put dire warnings and tell you if you didn't click on this link, you're going to have your account shut down. They're not going to send those via email. They're going to pick up the phone. They're going to call you as a consumer, or they're going to send you a letter to your registered address. They're not going to send these emails because they know, these organizations know that that is the technique that's being used by the fraudsters. And so they're trying to educate consumers. They'll never make those demands over email.
As an end user consumer, you still can't win because you've registered a .com and your name and your address are part of the who is, which is a public record. And so you're getting these fake banking queries and things like that. And so, you know, you can't win. So where can we go to get more education? I mean, there are podcasts like Category 5 Technology TV that deal a lot with cybersecurity. There yeah. are, you know, security blogs out there. Do you have resources for us that you can recommend that yeah. help to keep us safe?
There's a great resource in the Stay Safe Online campaign that has been, I know it's been translated into a number of different languages and has been localized to a number of different places around the world. So, I mean, I'd have to go look up the actual URL for each country, sure. but I think it's staysafeonline.org in the U.S. and okay. Canada, and then it goes beyond that into other countries as well. Mm-hmm. That's a great resource, great educational content. It's focused not only on consumers, but also small businesses and other areas. You know, it's a great place to start, and it'll point you in other directions as well. But just understanding that there are risks. That the internet is not necessarily a safe place if you don't know what you're doing. You know, and that isn't to dissuade people from, you know, don't bank online or any of those things. I'm not saying that at all. The internet is a very safe place to transact business if you can follow some distinct rules and just keep your wits about you. It's like walking down a street at night in a town you're not familiar with. You don't just hang out, you know, all the money out of your pockets and you pull the chains out so they're all visible and things. Mm-hmm. You take precautions to look around and understanding where you're at, and you sort of blend in.
Sure. And when someone walks up to you and says, yeah, I'm with the bank, I need you to give me money. Be
yeah.
skeptical.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Be skeptical.
Let's walk over to the branch and we'll talk there.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the famous saying from TV, trust no one. And I hate to say it, but it really, we have to take that approach where we just don't be too overly automatically trusting of everything that comes into your inbox or every phone call that comes to your telephone,
right.
Because
Absolutely.
There are people out to get you.
That even leads me right back to the poor guy from TELUS.
Yeah.
Or not from TELUS, the poor guy
customer.
with
and
TELUS.
Not, you know, this is not about TELUS.
No,
this could happen
this could,
to any
exactly.
provider, for sure.
But he yeah. probably thought and trusted that, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, if my account looks weird, for sure they'll just shut it down. Like, they're not going to let me run $65,000 worth of debt
boy, oh
without
boy.
Shutting it down. What if that was his only source of contact? A lot of people don't have anything but their cell phone.
Sure.
Right? So he didn't have a way to contact TELUS. Now I'm yeah. in his defense. I'm obviously on his defense team.
Yeah, and I'd be very surprised if he ended up paying even a moderate fraction of that bill at the end
sure.
of the day, because
mm-hmm.
you know, it appears that well, I mean, just I've only seen what's in the media so far, but it appears like there might have been a failure to really put constraints on that account when it was clearly going of its normal spend pattern.
Mm-hmm.
We're speaking with Robert Capps from New Data Security. You can find their website at newdatasecurity.com, and that's spelled N-U, and you see it at the bottom of your screen. Thank you so much for joining us once again here, Robert. We appreciate
yeah.
you sharing your knowledge. Is there anything that we haven't covered here tonight?
We've kind
of hit a lot of stuff. But if you're sitting at home right now and you're watching this, whether you be watching live or whether you're watching this on demand, maybe you're on YouTube watching this after the fact, make sure you send us an email. You can actually contact us at live@category5.tv. And if there are some questions that we can help you through, whether it be with regards to cybersecurity or just keeping your identity safe or protecting your customers, because really that's what this is all about, is taking that approach and realizing that, hey, we need to think about our end users, our customers, as well as ourselves, and protect
yeah.
their identities, then please email us live@category5.tv. And Robert, is there a way we can contact you directly or through the company?
My website, or the website you talked about, newdatasecurity.com, starting with NU, it has contact information and a way to get in touch with the company. I'm also on Twitter at RWCaps, so also follow me there. But plenty of ways to get in touch with me or with the company.
Thanks again for sharing your knowledge, and we appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you.
Take care. All the best.
Take care.